broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I'm here once again with Liberty Larry.
Woohoo! Yep. I'm here. Woo!
Yeah, it's nice to get this thing back together, right? Like, what a long, strange trip this has been. Huh?
Right. Well, it's nice to be back and feel like we're in some kind of routine. Like,
yeah.
I like it.
We're getting there. Hopefully, we're back to normal and more or less back to normal. Real life gets in the way from time to time. But
yeah. And we're going to have some of that. But yeah, it feels like the world's getting back to normal, too. At least my part of the world. I don't know how you feel, but...
Yeah, I mean, I spent more time in the office this week than I have in a couple of months, I guess.
Yeah, right.
So even with the holiday and everything. I think so. We've been going out to dinner.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been able to go out. Like, yeah. That's something that hadn't happened in forever.
Yeah, we said that after we recorded a couple of days ago that we were going out to dinner, and we did.
And we followed through.
Yep. So we were able to get a seat. It was really easy. There was no one there.
Yeah. And that's been my experience since all this started. Is like places are like that, at least, are empty.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
The beaches are insane. I saw some numbers from some groups this week from Gulf Shores this weekend that they had more people on the beach this weekend than they did during 4th of July last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like it was crazy. And the numbers I saw from some of the businesses reflected that. Like, I mean, they had some banner weekend, so.
All right, good. Well, I just got to indulge in the best part of having you back, which is that I was able to take a drink without pausing the podcast.
Helps keep the flow good.
Yeah.
What you drinking over there, Mike?
I also went to the liquor store today.
Nice.
I bought as much as I could. That's not really true. I could have bought plenty more, but
I was gonna say, they didn't restrict you, did they?
No. But I did. Well, they do have an interesting system. They've shut down some of the ABCs around here.
Yeah.
And directed you to other places. So one of the bottles that I bought, I mean, they sent me down to the specialty shop, which is where I actually do a lot of liquor store shopping anyway.
Best
because
place to go. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have things that you can't get elsewhere, and I got a bottle of Armagnac down there that I can't get anywhere else in the county anyway. So it was, it wasn't terrible, but, they let people in three at a time. You stand on your little number on the floor, and, you have your special shopper that works
Ooh,
at the ABC.
Special shopper.
Yeah. That works at the, one of the ABC store employees that you tell them what you want, and they go around and get it. And then they bring it up to the register and you check out.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. You have to know exactly what you want. There's no browsing.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks.
That's a problem for me because I usually don't know what I want when I go in anyway.
Yeah.
Like I want to kind of see what's available and then make my pick from that.
Well, and I asked for a particular scotch that they didn't have in stock. And they said, "Would you like something else instead?" And I said, "Well, yeah, probably, but I would have to peruse a little to figure that out, and I can't see what you've got over there in that corner."
I'm telling you, next time you go up there, take your binoculars with you.
Yeah, that. I mean, just bringing my glasses in with me
would probably
helped.
Do more than anything. Because
my vision is like I can see just fine up close. I don't need them to read or anything like that. I need them to drive and like see things that are far away from me.
If I
go to the movie theaters, I got to bring my glasses in because it's too far away for me to focus on the picture.
I have the same problem. I can't see far away well.
Yeah. So. But you have to wear your glasses all the time.
I do have to wear mine all because I'm basically blind without them, but not for stuff up close. It's for distance.
Right. Fair
and
enough.
I like to be able to see distance. It's important, man.
Yes. I remember, I knew that my vision was starting to go for a little while before I finally broke down and went and got my eyes checked and got glasses. And I remember the first time I wore my glasses when I was driving after that. And I was like, wow, did everybody know that trees aren't just big green blobs?
Right.
Like there's actual individual little bits that make up those green blobs.
Right. Trees have leaves.
Yeah. And I'm starting to get back that way. I probably need to go back and see the eye doctor again. Every few years, they've got to increase my prescription like a half of whatever the measurement is.
it's been almost 5 years since I've been to see an eye doctor.
Yeah.
And I need to bad. Like, my vision, I can tell, like, it's way worse than it should be.
Yeah.
And it's, like, bad without, it's really bad without the glasses. Like, I about can't see.
I can still read signs on the road. I figure as long as I can still read the signs, I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
And why spend all that money to get...
Question is, can you read the license plates? Not that you need to, but could you?
Depends.
Depends on how close you are, right?
It does. Well, let's get into things. We managed to somehow waste 5 minutes. You know, we haven't been able to, like, when we went out last, not this week, but last week, that was the first time we'd seen each other in 2 months.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you were taking the social distance serious.
Yeah. Well, I was trying. I mean, we didn't have a lot of data at that point.
That's true.
Better safe than sorry. You know, there was a while that I was worried for myself because they managed to make me thoroughly paranoid, even though I was sitting here here on this podcast, like, speaking out against it, like, about how the data wasn't suggestive of what they were having us do and how it was way overblown and so forth. And, like, while I knew that intellectually,
it's a different thing when you have to act on those. Like,
yeah.
Because, like, so through that whole deal, I was working at my store like I always do. Nothing really changed there. And like I was telling you earlier, like, I was weird about touching stuff. Like, I mean, and that's basically what I do all day is touch stuff to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I was constantly weirded out by it. But I finally just made the decision in my head that's like, look, if I get it, I get it. But I'm not going to, like, not touch things and not go through my normal routine because of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I was more concerned for my parents. I mean, it wasn't just a couple of weeks in. It was more concern for my parents than myself.
Oh, I get that.
You know, my parents are in their 70s and...
Oh, absolutely.
So it was I can't imagine how bad I would feel if I brought that into their home. You know?
That's true. No, I absolutely understand that.
But truth is, I didn't see them very much during that time period either.
I was going to say, yeah, because I remember talking to you. Yeah, you were pretty well here at the undisclosed location.
Yeah. Yeah, I spent a lot of time here. So. That's why I was talking about stupid video games on half the podcast.
Because that's what
much
you
else
were
to
doing.
Do. We've got a bunch of things to go over, and for those that are interested, because we've had some questions, like, we will talk about the General Flynn deal.
Yeah,
but not today. That deserves more time than we're willing to give it. Like, we've just got too many other things that we want to hit. We're trying to catch up.
Yeah, I didn't read them because I was at work, but there was some updates I saw on some of that today. Like, there was stuff that was still coming out today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do think we need to actually spend some time on that more so than what we're going to really have today.
Okay. Well, there was something that you wanted to address, the immediate current events.
Yeah. So, like, right now in Minneapolis, there's still riots going on now. Mm-hmm. I mean, for anybody that don't know, which I don't know how you couldn't, like, what was the guy's name? I had it written.
I don't remember.
But yeah, there was an
officer.
Bruce something.
No,
it wasn't Bruce. It was George something. It's on my phone somewhere. But an officer, like, literally killed this guy by kneeling on his neck, basically. Mm-hmm. And so there's been riots going on since day before yesterday, maybe?
Yeah.
And I have mixed feelings about this. Like, I'm all for, like, people being in the streets because this is a big deal. Like, this, mm-hmm. to me, there's not much of a bigger deal than this. Like, this is absolutely reason for people to be in the streets. I just don't think they should be attacking businesses.
Yeah.
They should be attacking government buildings.
Yeah.
Like, this is my position. Like, I mean, I am all for
We do not advocate attacking government buildings.
Mike does not advocate attacking government buildings. I, on the other hand, which I heard today that I guess a group got through and attacked one of the police stations and, like, was in the process of burning a police station down.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, yes, it's happening. Like, this is what needs to be happening. Like, take your frustration out where it needs to be taken out.
Well, I have some different feelings than that about it, really. First off, there certainly were problems with how it was handled. Like, the police department immediately lied about it, and then the video came out and then they had to change their story.
Yeah, that's on the other hand, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, but on the other hand, they did fire the four policemen officers involved like immediately,
and that's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not like it seems to me that people are out there rioting because they feel like the police department wasn't taking act. They weren't getting justice quickly enough or something like that.
Yeah.
But the truth is that this police department was acting more quickly than most do.
It's true. No, I don't think you're wrong about that.
And there, you know, there may have been, they were already pressing murder charges against one of the guy that was actually kneeling on his neck.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen very often.
No. And that's true. I mean, I would agree with you on all of those points. The problem I have is this keeps happening. Like, it's not, to me, it doesn't feel like this is an isolated incident. And it may be more of a fundamental problem of just having government run your police for you.
I think that's a small part of the problem.
Yeah.
I think the problem is something that we've mentioned here on this podcast before, is that government manages all levels of law enforcement.
Yeah.
It's government that controls the creation of laws, the interpretation of laws, and the enforcement of laws. Yeah. If any one of those things was handled by a private entity, if you just took the judicial part out of government hands and put it into private arbitration or something like that, that would go a long way towards actually creating something. Accountability.
Yeah.
Because the way it sits now is that all of those three levels defend each other,
yeah,
and back each other up and lie for each other.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So. And part of it is, well, I mean, it's this, you know, okay. So if I can go down, a little tangent for a minute,
let's do it.
I was watching a stream the other day while I was at the office. So I had a stream on one of my monitors while I was doing work on the other. And I say I was watching. I wasn't really watching. I was listening. But what I heard made me turn my attention to it, because there's this Australian guy, and he says he was talking about the response to the coronavirus stuff.
No.
And you know, the various mandates about masks and social distancing and so forth. And he said, well, it just seems like, you know, the countries that don't put as much emphasis on civil liberties can manage this better.
Yeah, I've heard this argument before myself.
And I was like, are you seriously complaining about living in a country that values civil liberties? I mean,
because I promise the alternative isn't better.
Yeah, you're in Australia. China's not far away. Go ahead.
Yeah, go give that a try. See how that works out.
Yeah. And I just he said, well, yeah, I mean, to a point. And I think that he was actually. He was talking about the tracking. Well, should talk about the tracing apps. We can spin this back around to the thing in Minnesota.
We can,
because I think this is kind of an important issue. I wish I brought my phone in here. A guy at my office sent me something yesterday about the HR 6666. That's the trace.
The tracing thing. The legislation or whatever?
Yeah. And he sent me the original title of it with a bunch of questions in it. Because the original title was much longer, and it included, you know, all. It was like, you know, to isolate people, you know, read house arrest, and for the COVID-19 and other issues, which it wasn't specific about what the other issues were. See, and
that's all to come later, because this is all groundwork for what's next. And I don't know what's next, but mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, there will be something next.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly it. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are on board with the tracing apps, and the argument that I hear, including from this Australian guy yesterday, is, well, you're already being tracked. You know, Google and Facebook and all these companies are already tracking you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, to some degree you can opt out. Like, Even if you can't click a button to opt out, you can stop using those things.
Well, that's, and I think that's really the point is, which I'm not okay with those companies tracking us either,
no,
by the
neither.
Way. But at the same time, you make a good point. I don't have to use those services if I don't want to.
Right.
I'm going to assume that whatever this new tracking deal is, we're not going to have an opt out for that.
Yeah. Well, like, right
we
now
will be
it's
required.
Right now, most countries that have instituted it, countries that value civil liberties that have instituted it, have made it optional.
But he
was saying, you know, you're already being tracked by these other companies, and I don't have any problem with my government tracking me in that way. And because then he, of course, he made the argument. He says, if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you have to worry about? And somebody else in the chat was like, are you serious?
Right. Like, that is the most, like, basic and worst argument for that.
Yeah. I mean, because look at what we do right here, or just our membership in the Libertarian Party. We're in an outside party that part of its goal is to take apart at least some aspects of government, to reduce the power and size and scope of government. Well, you don't think that might
imagine
be considered threatening?
Government isn't really going to take too kindly to that.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to be as extreme as that. Like, I mean, even like just Democrats being in power and having that power over Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they've already exercised some of this stuff with the Flynn thing.
Yeah. And that's what it comes down to, I think, in the end. He said, well, you know, I know a lot of people don't trust their government, and I guess I get that, but I trust my government. And I mean, this is all chat, so I can't exactly interact with him, but I mean, I could have, but I wasn't going to type a paragraph.
Big
and
thing,
like,
yeah.
But I was thinking, okay, you trust your government. Yeah. What about the next one?
Yeah.
Or the one after that?
Yeah.
How do you know that you're going to trust them?
Well, and as far as us here in this country, I don't trust this government at all.
Oh, yeah. No, me neither.
This is one of the most corrupt governments there is, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and if you just look at, I mean, I don't keep a whole lot of track of what's going on in Australia, but I keep track of international affairs enough to know, just based on the information that the Australian government was releasing last year during the wildfires, that I don't trust that government.
Exactly.
And I can see your response of, well, you know, there's protections in place to prevent that kind of abuse. Yeah. But what you're talking about in allowing the government to start tracking your every move and ignore civil liberties issues to get some things done like that, you're like advocating the erosion of those exact protections.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean,
that's what protects you, is their inability to just do this thing. And now you're saying, well, let them go ahead and do it because there's protections in place. Well, not when they're done.
Exactly. Exactly. It's scary, man. What's scary the most to me is that there are people out there that, and there's a lot of them that think that way, mm-hmm. and that think that this is, that's a okay state of mind to be in. And I don't know. I mean, that's what we're up against.
Yeah, well, and I've said with this podcast, one of my goals is to get on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list of anti-government extremists. Certainly gets me on some list. Yeah. I mean, I the guy that sent me the thing about the title of the HR 6666.
Yeah.
He's a former Ranger. He's a good guy. He's a very devout Christian. Like. I couldn't pick out something wrong about him, really. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he's done bad things or does bad things from time to time, but nothing extreme, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I certainly wouldn't worry
he's
about...
He's not like a bad person.
No, yeah. Not at all. Yeah. In fact, one of the best people I know, I think. I mean, you know, from what I know of him.
Yeah.
And so what sparked that whole thing is I went in and I asked him, and I said, you know, you're not somebody who breaks the law or does bad things as much as you can help it, at least. I mean, accidental bad things are
everything
accidental,
happens,
right?
Yeah.
But I said, so that being the case, how do you feel about your government tracking your every move? He's like, absolutely not.
Yeah,
I would
it's
never
not
allow
okay.
That.
Yeah, it's not okay.
And I said, well, you're not doing anything wrong. Why wouldn't you do that? He's like, who would trust anyone with that kind of information and power?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't get it. And so, but this is kind of what's happened in law enforcement, right? Is that they've increasingly been given power to the police state kind of power. They've turned from peace officers to law enforcement officers.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. Like, because that's really what they should be there to do is to, I mean, I think of like the old days with like Officer Nice or whatever, you know.
Officer Friendly.
Officer Friendly. That's why I couldn't pull it. Yeah. Yeah. Like Officer Friendly. And that's what the cops should be. You know, I mean, but they're far from that now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and just like the instances of like no knock raids and stuff like that. Like to me, there's never an excuse to execute a no knock raid.
I agree.
And they do more and more every year.
Yeah. Well, was it Radley Valco? Is that guy's name? It's something like that. He was supposed to speak at one of our conventions. A couple years ago. His estimate is that there's something like 50,000 SWAT raids a year in the U.S.
Yeah,
that's 1,000 every week.
There's no SWAT
raids.
There's no cause for that, and most of them are for drugs. And like, who cares? Like, I mean, it's not like they're going in looking for like child molesters or something. Like, I might almost get on board with that.
Yeah, well, I still couldn't. I mean, I have a real problem with a no knock raid.
Well, me too.
And mostly because it creates a dangerous situation, just in and of itself. Because whether you've got a good warrant or not, if you bang down my door in the middle of the night, you're likely to get shot at, which means I'm likely to get killed.
Well, I mean, for the listeners, and I've read a little bit about this guy, but the incident with Duncan Limp was the same type thing. And like I said, I haven't read enough to really speak on that specific incident. But if you're interested, it's something to look into because that's kind of what happened there. You know, I mean, people break into your home and you don't know any different. Like, you don't know if these are robbers or if they're police.
Yeah. If they yell police, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're police. Yeah.
I mean, that would be the first thing I would do as a robber is yell police. Like, right? I mean, not saying I'd rob somebody, but like common sense tells you, you know.
Yeah. So, you create that hesitation, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. They've certainly overstepped their authority in this case. At the point that you lean on somebody's neck long enough with them yelling that they can't breathe, because this can actually happen really fast too. Like if you actually like really occlude blood flow to the brain, you're out in like 12 seconds or something like that. It takes almost no time. But
they're training how to tell them that. I mean, there should be, I mean, I don't know anything. I've never been trained as a police officer, so I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, that should be a no-brainer. Like,
yeah. Well, the thing that seems apparent to me from what I saw of this is that, by the time the guy had died, and well before it, frankly, he wasn't a threat.
Yeah. Well, and that's the point. Like, I mean, even if all he had to do was give the guy some slack, like, I mean, because he wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
like,
there were three other guys on.
Yeah, they had him. Like, exactly.
Yeah. I was saying to a guy at work that actually, this is what I got off on him is besides the whole, the drug war and the various ways that police can do proactive policing now, which creates a lot of antagonistic interactions.
A lot of the problems that you have. Like, I mean, you remove the drug war from all of this and just legalize everything. Mm-hmm. A lot of these problems go away just like that. I'm not saying things are perfect afterwards, but you're on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because you can go looking for a crime as it is. There is an economic incentive to police departments to do that because then they can seize your car, your house, and so forth. Like, that's a problem in and of itself. Yeah. I can't think of the term for the
asset
forfeiture.
Civil asset forfeiture.
Which is ridiculous. It's like a way, it essentially gives the police the ability to steal.
Yeah.
It like, here's your legal right to steal. That's pretty much what that does. But beyond that is that we have, like, in the last, really, I guess in the last 50 years or so, we've completely given up on the old common law practice, which was a part of our law at the beginning. I mean, most of our our law came from the old English common law practices. And in the last 50 years, through various forms of judicial activism, they have essentially removed the idea of the right to resist, the right to resist unlawful arrest.
Yeah.
And there was a time in this country where if they didn't have a good reason, like a real legitimate, like, you know, served warrant reason to arrest you, that you didn't have to go. Yeah. And you could do anything in your power, up to and including lethal force, to prevent an unlawful arrest. And so could bystanders.
Yeah. So if you saw something going on, you could step in.
Yeah. But that has been completely removed through various forms of judicial activism, that you are now required to...
You are forced to comply.
Yeah, yeah. You're now required to comply. There's no more right to resist. Yeah.
Whether they're right or wrong, and even the attorneys will tell you, like, it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you have to comply. Fight it in court.
Yeah.
And guess what? Get ready to lose.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, like, how much of your freedom do you lose in the meantime?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you're probably looking at weeks at least, and probably months of freedom if you're actually just going to fight it in court. Yep. And whatever money you have to put down if you make bail.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the other end of it, you know.
And there have been cases of people spending years in prison and dying in prison that never saw a court. They were never tried for anything.
The other thing is the right to a speedy trial is a joke.
Like, oh, yeah.
You can't get a speedy trial.
And it's amazing that that's the case, because something like 98% of cases are resolved through plea deals. How is it that they only actually try 2% of cases and they still can't keep up?
And still can't keep up with the backlog. It's crazy. So,
I think it doesn't exactly lead us to, but... I think it's worth talking about now, in terms of right to resist, is the Ahmed Arbery.
Maybe. I don't know.
It's a case in Georgia. The guy appears to may have been a jogger who had stopped in a house that was under construction.
Oh, yeah, yes. Okay.
And then when he's jogging down the street, a couple of guys from the neighborhood cut him off in their pickup truck and threaten him with guns. And the story is that they were trying to do a stop and a citizen's arrest because they suspected he was responsible for some robberies that were in the area.
Yeah.
And as more information has come out, it's turned out that that is a complete bull. I mean, like, the whole thing is ridiculous. And there's a podcast that I listen to. It's the Beauty and the Beta podcast, which I enjoy. They do mostly news. They're certainly more right-wing podcast, but they're entertaining and they cover some stuff that isn't being covered elsewhere, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But they're usually pretty good on this kind of thing, and they've been terrible on this one. Well, not really terrible, but disappointing anyway.
Yeah.
On this one, that there's even any question that this was legitimate for these guys that stopped this other guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me very clear. It seems to me very clear that there is no question who initiated force in this case.
Yeah.
If you were jogging down the street and somebody cut you off in a truck and was brandishing a shotgun,
we're fixing to have a gunfight.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that guy either attacking the person with the shotgun or trying to wrestle the shotgun away from him.
Yeah.
I think that that's perfectly reasonable under the circumstances because he's been threatened first.
Absolutely.
And the whole idea of a citizen's arrest is like you have to have witnessed the crime.
Yeah.
Which they didn't. They just suspected that this guy, you know, like, and apparently one of the attackers, I'll say, had been with the local sheriff's department or some law enforcement agency until fairly recently. And so they keep passing this case away because everybody knows him and nobody wants to take the trial. I think it's been moved to Cobb County now from I think it started in Buford, Georgia. So having lived there, it's been a while, but I would say that's probably 200 miles away.
Oh, wow.
That they've moved this case because it keeps getting transferred. Either the district attorney or the judge keeps stepping away from it. Anyway,
yeah.
But I would say that it is in terms of right to resist that Ahmed Arbery had every right to resist them trying to stop him and had every right to use lethal force to do that. Unfortunately, he ended up in the wrong end. He was the guy that was killed.
Yeah.
But that there's even any kind of question about who's responsible for this and whether this is murder or not, I think is silly. Yeah. It is a very clear case of murder to me.
I mean, no question in my mind, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, I don't. And there's so much of this going on, which is why I say, like I did. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I get why people are in the streets, and I support it. Mm-hmm. I just wish they would focus their energy better
on the problem. Yeah.
I mean, that because that's what gets me. I mean, and I don't, like I say, it doesn't solve anything to attack the target in the AutoZone. Like, I mean, it just doesn't. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and I get that those are, because I've heard the argument be put that these are big corporations and big businesses and they need to step up and say something. And I just don't see it that way. The only thing I see happening is them leaving those communities.
Yeah. Well, I think their only responsibility is to make products available to those communities. It's not their job to be activists.
Yeah. And it's not. It's the government.
In fact, there's very little that irritates me more than an activist corporation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no joke. I didn't even think about it from that perspective, but you're right. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, like, sell me my product and keep your politics out of it.
Speaking of politics,
moving, as we segue,
moving away from this, just like a couple of quick hits, I think, and then we'll move into something we can spend a little bit more time with. I would say that a lot of this, actually, let's start somewhere else. So our new issue, just to do some quick foreign policy stuff. You know, we had the attempted coup in Venezuela a couple of weeks ago, which we may or may not have been involved with. But there were two former U.S. special ops guys that were running the thing. So, you know,
take from that what you will.
Exactly. the new great outrage that gets both of our most hated countries involved is that Iran is trading oil with Venezuela.
Ooh.
Yeah. Since both of these countries are under the strictest economic sanctions that we have for anybody in the world right now, we're literally trying to starve the people to death.
Yeah. In both of these countries.
Yeah. I think that it's perfectly, I'm perfectly content with them engaging in voluntary trade between each other.
Well, and who the hell gives us the right to step in there and tell them they can't?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where, I mean, that's where I stand with it. I mean, I'm not fans of any, I don't really care one way or the other, but it just seems crazy that we would step in and be like, oh, wait, y'all are both under sanctions, so y'all can't trade. I mean, what is it that you used to call when you surrounded the castle, a siege?
Yeah.
Like, that's, is
this
that
is the modern day siege.
This is a modern day siege. That's all this is.
Yeah. And the goal is the same, is to starve the people out.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm sorry, I can't be on the side of that.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. It is one of the worst humanitarian attacks that can be launched, I think, at this point in the world, is the blockade, the trade blockade.
Yeah.
And the other thing that it does, it doesn't help us in the long run anyway, because all we've done is made both of these countries, particularly Iran, more reliant on Russia and China.
Yeah, which is a scary proposition in itself. I mean, because that when you mentioned that, that's exactly what I was thinking is, well, I wonder where China and Russia stand on this.
They're happy to trade.
I bet they are.
Yeah. Of course, you know, there's some drawbacks to that, because that might be a big part of the reason that Iran had such a terrible outbreak of the coronavirus.
Well,
is because almost all of their trade is with China at this point.
Yeah.
Now, another part of it, though, is that while we claim that we're not blockading any medical
supplies,
we are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think even if we weren't intentionally, that just by the idea of having the blockade up is going to...
It scares people away.
Well, exactly. But not as much we'll get in as should.
Yeah. And speaking of China, we have now decided this week, after a security resolution, as I understand it, now I could be wrong about this, in Hong Kong, we have decided that Hong Kong is no longer an autonomous city, and that it shouldn't be given the privileges of being separate from the People's Republic of China in terms of trade with the U.S. It was given special privileges because of its special status, and now we're saying that that special status no longer exists, and it's our job to enforce that the contract between the U.K. and China be executed properly. Now, why that one's our problem, again, don't know. Using the UN. It is a UN-backed agreement between the UK and China.
What do you think has changed our position on that?
Just this announcement of the security resolution that they're going to allow Chinese intelligence to have a presence within the city of Hong Kong.
Yeah, but why have we decided that's a...
I mean, I'm not entirely sure. Just to keep pressure up on China, I think, is the big thing. I mean, there are plenty of factions within the U.S. government and military establishment that are itching for a war with China.
Yeah.
Why that is completely beyond my understanding. Well, it's job security is what it is. I mean, as much as anything else. It's money for some and job security for others. That's what it's about. But it's certainly not in our interest, like the people of the United States.
Last thing we want is a war with anybody, but particularly with China.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, we don't want a war with Iran. We damn sure don't want a war with China.
Hell no.
And we don't want a war with Russia either, but there are people that are itching for that one too.
That's true.
So I don't know. I think that it's really just to keep, you know, to maintain this idea that China's the bad guy.
Yeah. Okay.
It goes along with the coronavirus claims as well. That's my best guess.
Yeah.
Moving to the coronavirus, we may as well do some updates there. It keeps coming up kind of no matter what we're talking about anyway.
Yeah, everything seems to revolve around that right now.
So this, I want to start with just a couple of, you know, pieces of interest, I think. Now, one is that I have been saying this whole time that any kind of pronouncements that are made about the nature of the virus, infection rates, fatality rates, transmission vectors, et cetera, are best guesses at this point. There has not been enough time for any thorough studies, replicable studies to be done to determine the truth of any of this. And it's the same thing with the treatments, right? So I talked, the last podcast I did alone, I talked about the difference between hydroxychloroquine, the hydroxychloroquine zinc thing, and remdesivir, and said that, you know, they dismissed one of them, the hydroxychloroquine, because they said that there hadn't been any studies, you know, peer-reviewed studies that could support the effects of it. And then they started promoting remdesivir when the same was
in
true.
The same boat.
Yeah, the same was true of that. I guess as long as we're talking about those two things, the study that they keep talking about with the hydroxychloroquine took patients that were already in bad shape and said that they, you know, that they all died, or, you know, most of them died or whatever, the people that were already on a ventilator. Well, it's very clear from the it seems very clear from the medical stuff that hydroxychloroquine is effective when taken early or when taken as a prophylactic.
Yeah.
By the time that you're in such a bad shape, it doesn't do anything. But that's the study that they keep touting to tell you how terrible it is and how it'll kill you.
Well, which is why Trump's taking it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But the main thing is that it costs tens of cents a day for treatment with hydroxychloroquine, and it costs hundreds of dollars a day for treatment with remdesivir. And by the way, the study that they keep talking about with remdesivir that says that it showed that people recovered on average 4 days faster or something, 4 or 5 days, I can't remember, from the virus. It also showed that it didn't have any impact on mortality. It was the same percentage of people that died from the virus as if they weren't taking it. So if the one thing kills you, so does the other. But if you recover, you recover faster.
There you go.
But I think that this is mostly a money thing.
Yeah.
Here's the other bit. And if you stop and think about it for a minute, you'll realize it, but they keep going on about how, well, we're working towards a a vaccine. Well, we'll get this vaccine and that'll fix all our problems. Yeah. But we've had this for a season. We actually do not know at this point whether recovering from the virus and getting antibodies in your system provides long-term immunity.
Yeah.
It is the same class of virus that causes the common cold. You do not get long-term immunity from getting the common cold. You can get it again the next season. In fact, you can get it twice in the same season. Like, you can catch it at the beginning of the season and catch it again at the end of the season. Yeah. So the fact of the matter is, and like I said, if you stop and think about it, you'll realize that if you do not get long-term immunity from the development of antibodies, a vaccine does nothing.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to keep changing it, right?
Well, no, you just have to keep doing it. Yeah. Like, it would be, I guess, similar to the flu vaccine, except the flu vaccine, they actually give you different strains of flu.
The flu to, you know, to facilitate the antibodies.
But it would be something that you would have to take every year. And it may or may not be effective.
Yeah.
But that's what they want. That's what they love about the flu vaccine, and that's kind of what they want with this, too. Because if you're taking it every year, that's a whole lot of money. And, of course, vaccine producers are protected from any liability of from any issues that result. They're indemnified.
Well, that's what scares,
legally indemnified from any problems that result.
That's what scares me, is the idea that I could, that they could give this to a massive amount of the population, like, without any real testing or whatever, and that, like, people end up dying and sick from something. And that's part of the reason I won't be taking it regardless. Like, I'll take my chances.
I'm not as worried about that. There have been, we ought to spend some time on this sometime in the future. There have been a lot of discussions about the constitutionality of forcing people to take vaccines.
That's what I'm worried about. Because there has been a big push towards that. And I'm, like I said, not on board myself.
No, absolutely not. So. But for some reason, this is my chance to tear down Cuomo a little bit, because I don't like the guy anyway.
Yeah.
But he's being held up as some kind of hero in this, which, as I heard Dave Smith say, I don't know why you would hold this guy up as the hero since he's over the city that has had the worst coronavirus
right?
impact. But
that's a good point.
Anyway, a lot of people don't know this because they don't seem to be talking about it because they're trying to make this guy into a hero. I mean, I think they're setting him up for a presidential run in the future is my guess. Some people are talking about him taking over in 2020. I don't think that's happening, but
I don't know, man. I'm just saying Biden ain't looking good.
No. You're right about that, but it doesn't matter. They're all in on Biden. Yeah. The only person that's going to take Biden's place is going to be Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So, I still got my fingers crossed for that one, because that'll be so entertaining.
Right.
To, you know, this time get to cover a Clinton-Trump campaign. That'll be...
Oh, man.
Yeah. Good times. But so at the beginning of this, and I will say that, you know, we didn't understand a whole lot of things about transmission. Like, I mean, even less than we do now about transmission and so forth. So he's not entirely at fault. However, at the beginning of this, Cuomo did make an executive order from the Department of Health in New York that required nursing homes to accept patients that were recovering or had the virus.
Yeah, he did do that.
Right. So
I remember that.
Then, and also, like, a huge percentage of the nursing of the deaths are nursing home deaths.
Oh yeah, well, that's what I was fixing to say. Is that's what I've read. Is, like, I mean, this thing is just ravaging nursing homes.
Yeah, and a huge percentage of the deaths in the U.S. are in the I think it's a dozen states that essentially adopted the same policy of requiring nursing homes to, or actually housing the sick in nursing homes.
Yeah. Oh man.
And so, and a similar thing happened in the UK. The UK cleared out their hospitals in anticipation of the COVID cases. Mm-hmm. Essentially, like, or maybe I should say potentially, because, you know, how much study has been done of this, but we'll say potentially seeding nursing homes with the virus. Like, sending people out of the hospitals into the nursing homes.
Just, I mean, granted, we didn't know everything we know now, maybe. But just on its face, that just seems like such a bad idea. Like, just the whole idea of loading up nursing homes. Because, you had to know that that's going to be the most affected people by this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it just seems like such a
bad
idea.
You didn't have to know that.
You didn't have to know that. But it seemed like it just, common sense just seems to dictate that to me. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and if you put on your like nefarious hat, you could start thinking, well, you know, particularly in places like the UK with the National Health Service, the old people are a real strain on the system.
Yeah. Well, and that's, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't think that was the case. I don't think anybody was like intentionally trying to kill off the old people, but that's been the result.
But yeah, I mean, it doesn't help the fact that that's what happened.
And then moving on with this, I did, okay, maybe I should start with the CDC stuff. So early this week, I think it was Tuesday, you know, the CDC does weekly updates. They released a new report. It included five different scenarios for the future of the coronavirus in the U.S. The first four scenarios were kind of playing around with a couple of pieces, a couple of the variables.
Yeah.
So max min and see what the results would be. The fifth scenario, though, was based on the best data that we have at this time for the coronavirus.
Yeah.
In terms of infection rates and so forth. And actually, they included the idea. I think that they were kind of generous to the coronavirus here because they included the idea that asymptomatic people could transfer the virus at the same rate as symptomatic people, which doesn't seem to be the case.
Like super spreaders.
Yeah. But there's new data coming out saying that that's not the case. But
there are no super spreaders.
They granted the asymptomatic patients the same, like 100% transmissibility of symptomatic patients in their model.
Yeah.
All right. And so based on the best information that we have at this time, the CDC was estimating a fatality rate among symptomatic patients of 4 in 1,000. So for every 1,000 people that has symptoms of the virus, 4 people die. That's a mortality rate of 0.4% of symptomatic patients. Now, they also estimated that roughly 35% of people with the virus never develop any symptoms. So if you factor that in, then the fatality rate, the IFR is what they call it, the infection fatality rate, is 0.26. Which is more than an order of magnitude less than what they've been claiming all along.
Oh, yeah.
Which they've been claiming somewhere between 3 and 4%, I think, mortality rates. From the best information we have at this time, the CDC estimates the fatality rate to actually be about 0.26%.
Wow.
Now, I understand that if you're among those people that's affected by that, that's
horrible.
All losses are awful, right? Like, we don't want people to die. But I would suspect that the fatality rate of bankruptcy or unemployment or whatever is probably higher than that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm sitting here thinking right now.
So, I don't know. And then I watched this really interesting interview. So, we're all familiar with the, is it Neil Ferguson? Model that it's the one that estimated
that blew
like
it up.
2.2 million people in the U.S. would die from this virus.
Yeah.
That is, I would say at this point, we can probably safely say is clearly wrong.
Yeah.
Now there was a competing model that came out around the same time. And Dr. Gupta. I can't remember her first name. Anyway, I watched an interview with her earlier this week, and it was really interesting because all she did was apply a simple standard epidemiological model to her estimates, to create her estimates, which is the SIR epidemiological model. It essentially looks at the susceptibility of a population, the infections within the population, and the recovered. People that have recovered to model out how the virus will spread.
Yeah.
And she was saying that based on the data that we have now looking across nations, various quarantining or isolation protocols, varying everywhere from no protocols at all to strict lockdowns, that SIR model most closely fits the results of what we've seen. And that what she was suggesting is that the that almost everywhere, the virus has come and gone, essentially, that it's on its way out, that we've seen the worst of it, and now a bulk of the population, enough of the population has immunity, and so we've reached that kind of herd immunity, and that the lockdown protocols didn't have any impact on the spread of the virus.
Yeah, I mean, just anecdotally looking at it, I would agree with at least that end of it, that the lockdowns just didn't help.
Yeah. Well, and you remember when states like Georgia and Florida were opening up and they were saying, oh, no, now we're going to see the second wave.
Yeah.
We haven't.
Hasn't. And I still hear even now people rumbling about a second wave and this, that, and that, especially like we were talking at the front of the podcast about Gulf Shores just being a madhouse right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if all of the social distancing and stuff was helped so much, I mean, we should be in serious trouble a couple of weeks from now. I don't see it though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
Yeah. And then finally, let's just do one more topic and then we'll close things out.
Sure.
Because this is just kind of entertaining to me. But it does raise some questions that I think are worth examining in terms of politics. And that is the whole Trump tweet fiasco.
Oh, right. Where they fact checked his tweet?
Yeah, yeah. So remember, Trump has been tweeting all kinds of crap for
years.
Yeah, many years.
Yeah.
And they finally flagged a tweet.
Yeah. I can't believe this is the first time they've done it.
Yeah. They flagged it as potentially misleading or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was read.
Those lines, though, yeah.
And then it has a little link that you can click for more information. Mm. Now, I don't know if you went to see what the more information was.
I haven't.
All right. The more information was that this tweet contains potentially misleading information. I can't remember exactly how it said it. It was something along those lines, though. But, you know, potentially misleading information according to CNN and the Washington Post.
Because those are our standard bearers.
Right. And, of course, it didn't provide you anything more than that. It's not like it linked to any studies or any kind of hard data. It was based on these news organizations' feelings, apparently, that this could be potentially misleading. And in response, Trump threatens to shut down social media. Then they've brought up the question once again, are they a platform or a publisher?
Yeah.
You know, for those that want to get into the nitty gritty, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act protects platforms from being liable for information that is presented by users on their website. So essentially, things like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and so forth, if all they're doing is hosting information provided by users, then they can't be held liable for anything that those users post.
Yeah. Which
the user still can be.
Oh, yeah. Well, and as they should be.
But the platform can't.
Yeah.
And so it defines a difference between a platform, a media platform, and a publisher, essentially being editorializing.
Yeah.
So the question is, at what point are you editorializing?
I mean, I would say absolutely at this point for them and for Facebook.
Yeah.
Because I see those little snippets on Facebook all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty of them on my post.
Well, I mean, there's certainly some picking and choosing going on. Now, Trump says that, you know, they're always silencing conservative voices. That's not the case from what I've seen.
Yeah.
It is mostly conservative voices, but it's mostly conservative voices that are dissidents. Dissidents on the left are being silenced too, though.
Yeah.
So it's not really about whether you're right or left. It's whether you're buying into the mainstream narrative or not.
Yeah.
If you're opposing the mainstream narrative, whether from the left or the right.
Or the government.
Well, one and the same.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. So if you're opposing the mainstream narrative from either the left or the right or any other direction, that's what's getting silenced. It just happens to be mostly right wingers that are opposing
that
the narrative.
That, yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a question worth considering. Like, at what point are they editorializing? I think that the fact that they are you know, that there's this appeal to authority all the time about, you know, particularly like the coronavirus stuff, or if you, as another example, which is, I think is very similar in a lot of ways, the global warming stuff, or, you know, anthropogenic global climate change, whatever the
whatever
term
we're
is.
Calling it this week.
Yeah. That, okay, well, the scientists say, but then YouTube and other platforms are silencing MDs, like legitimate MDs that are opposing the mainstream narrative about coronavirus. Yeah. Well, how come you're appealing to the credentials of the one guy that agrees with you, but you're silencing the guy with the same credentials that doesn't?
Exactly.
That starts to seem like editorializing to me.
Oh, without question.
You know, I think it's funny. But the other thing that I think is interesting about it is that when they finally decided to say something about one of Donald Trump's posts, it's when he was talking about mail-in ballots being rife for fraud.
Yeah.
Why is it that this is the issue?
Yeah.
That finally makes them decide to flag one of his posts? Why is it mail-in ballots? Yeah. Why is it related to the election? The upcoming election, and the idea that would benefit the Democrats, that's finally the thing that they're like, well, you know, we can't let them get away with this.
We're going to dig in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a question worth asking.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know if there's any kind of conspiracy. I'm not even suggesting necessarily that there is, but it's a question worth asking.
It doesn't seem like it's an accident.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
You know, I was telling you a couple of weeks ago, there's no good place to like drop this into the narrative that we're creating here.
Yeah.
But I was telling you a couple of weeks ago that I saw somebody, I think it was on France 24. Some commentator, who was saying that, you know, the evidence seems to be that any future president is going to be most likely another George W. Bush or a Donald Trump, that Barack Obama was an oddity looking at the future, that, you know, any future presidents will be more like these two guys. And that I thought that was really strange, because really, it seems to me what he's identifying is that it looks like future presidents are going to be Republican, not Democrat, because if you put those three people together and told me to group two of them, I would have put Bush and Obama together. I think Trump's the standout. That's the weirdo in that group.
Oh, absolutely. yeah, I mean, Obama and Bush have way more in common than Trump and any mix of the rest.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's definitely, you're right about that.
Yeah, he's the outsider.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I just thought that was odd and kind of funny. And actually, like, okay, so here's a good place to end. We can plug our own narrative as we go out today. So for a long time, you've essentially gotten 8 years a Republican, 8 years a Democrat, 8 years a Republican, 8 years a Democrat. So, and it seems to be that the rationale is that a majority of voters are independent in the country. I think that that's changing a little bit. Like, there's definitely more partisanship,
people backing into picking a corner and sticking in it.
Yeah. But I still think that most voters in this country are independent. And it seems to me that what's happening is that they're like, the Democrats didn't get us in a place that we want to be, so let's try the Republicans. Well, he's only had 4 years. Let's give him another 4 years, see what he can do.
Yeah.
Okay, the Republicans didn't get us there. Let's get a Democrat in office. Okay. Well, he's only had 4 years. Let's give him another 4 years and see what he can do.
Yeah.
Well, the Democrats didn't get us there. Let's try a Republican. And we've been doing this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And what I would say is that if you're not getting what you want out of the Republicans or the Democrats, and it seems clear to me that people are dissatisfied with the status quo in general, and that's how we got Obama and then Trump. Both of those guys were outsiders in terms of political establishment when they were elected.
Yeah.
But you're still not getting what you want, are you, out of the Republicans or the Democrats? Maybe, just maybe, it's time to try someone from a different party. And the Libertarian Party has a good candidate this year, Jo Jorgensen. Check her out. It may be time that if you really want something to change, if you're not satisfied with where we're going and you actually want something to change, that you pick something completely different.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Just a thought.
Yep.
With that, we'll we'll truck on out of here, I suppose. As always, follow us on Facebook and iTunes. No, Facebook and I don't know. Follow us where you can follow us. Subscribe where you can subscribe. Like and share. It certainly helps us out a lot if you pass along the message. And we'll be back in about a week. Is the plan?
I'm thinking Thursdays.
Yeah, we're gonna try and get back to Thursdays, and so we'll be back in about a week. In the meantime, try and stay free.
Life's short, live free.
Ciao.
Later.